This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's time for our Makaranga wrap-up, and joining me today are Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yao Hua, the editors of makaranga.org, to give us, you know, some highlights of environmental issues that made the headlines in September. And, you know, we're going to look forward to some things in October, you know, that all of us can, get talking about and participate in. So welcome, both of you. How are you today?
I'm good.
Fine, thanks.
Thank you so much. I always look forward to our monthly chat. So, just earlier in the previous episode of Earth Matters, we were talking about World Rivers Day, which was just yesterday with Dr. Kali. And, I think there's no end to polluted rivers, right? That it seems to be a perennial problem in our country.
Yeah, indeed. And what certainly grabbed the headlines, you know, in early September is that residents in the Klang Valley, we had to queue for water rationing again, or at least quite a good number of us had to. And that was because some of the rivers were polluted in Selangor. Mm-hmm. And that led to, shutdown of our water treatment plants, and then water supply shut down for, I think, like 1.2 million users in the Klang Valley, and up to 5 million residents actually had to go for days without clean water, without water even from the pipes, right? And that caused a lot of trouble for many people. And then a lot of people were really unhappy. And I guess the fall of that was that eventually the directors, and the manager of the company that was accused of, discharging the hazardous waste into Sungai Gong, they were arrested and then I think now released on bail, and the trial is still ongoing. Siew-Lin, were you affected at all by the water cut?
Yeah, I think the unexpectedness of it, there was no warning or anything at all. I can imagine a lot of people felt that way. And it just makes you angry again. It's like, why is this happening again? And not just in the Klang Valley, but all over Malaysia. And, we know they've been publishing all these lists of dirty rivers or the most polluted rivers for years now. So, do something about it. I think a lot of people feel, why is action not being carried out? When we have this list, we know which are the most polluted rivers. What sort of action is being taken?
Yeah, talking about that report, right? So the Department of Environment, they are the governmental agency that's in charge of river quality. Mm-hmm. So that every year they have this report called the Environmental Quality Report. And in that report, they actually monitor about 480 rivers in Peninsular Malaysia. So Sabah Sarawak is another agency. And everyone can go look it up online, this report, the Environmental Quality Report. But the latest available report online is actually 2017, and you actually have to dig your way through the website to find it. But if you just look at the chart, right, like 2008 to 2017, it's quite a bleak picture of that 480 rivers that they monitor. By 2017, only 46%, so say half, less than half of those rivers are considered clean. The other half are considered slightly polluted or polluted. The polluted ones is like 11% of all those rivers. And so it's kind of crazy if you think about it. Like 1/10 of all the rivers that they monitor in Peninsular Malaysia is considered polluted. And of those 51 polluted rivers, like 27 are in Johor itself. Kind of point to something kind of weird there, or at least something to be highlighted. So I think everyone should really kind of at least look at this report and look at those numbers. So what to do now then? As Siew-Lin said, these numbers have been around for years. People know which rivers are polluted. Sungai Gong itself is actually in 2017 also considered polluted. So, some sectors are calling for, stricter regulations and harsher penalties. The Agong has expressed its concern. The Sultan of Selangor has expressed its concern. The PDRM said we can use harsher penalties and all of this. Well, there are also others that are saying it's not really the harsher penalties. The law is sufficient. But what is really needed is better enforcement, stricter enforcement. And do you guys know that, the Selangor Municipal Council, they came out and say that, the factory that was responsible, for discharging the hazardous waste, has been operating without license since 2014.
That's right. Yeah.
About, what more laws do you need? They could actually go and demolish the building if they want to. But of course, the municipal, they enforce the licensing, right? Not the, I don't think they enforce the environmental assessment, that kind of stuff. So that's under the Department of Environment. But still, 6 years, it tells you a bit, you know, about the enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, it points to a much larger problem and some issues which come to affect our water quality and, you know, just our daily lives as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, definitely this is something to be highlighted. Hopefully that we don't need to highlight this again sometime in the future. Yeah.
One hopes lah, one hopes, isn't it?
Yes.
But just moving on, you know, COVID cases are picking up in Malaysia again, and that has already affected the livelihood of, you know, those who are in the ecotourism sector. You know, do you foresee that it's going to hit them harder now that, you know, our cases are rising again?
Absolutely. I think, well, for us, obviously, ecotourism is something that is key because it's connected to protected areas and conservation. And basically, I think what the experts are saying is going to take 4 years for tourism to recover. And that includes ecotourism. So we do not need another spike. Mm. Unfortunately, that is happening in Sabah and for various reasons. And it appears to be that the election, the recent election that was state election that was held, is going to contribute to the even greater increase in numbers. And people who have flown back to Sabah are going all over back to wherever they worked. Can't blame them.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate. But in Sabah itself, I mean, ecotourism is especially important for Sabah because they have virtually, you can say virtually every single tourist product in Sabah has some element of ecotourism in it. You know, it's got some element of nature that's related to nature and certainly conservation, you know. So the concern there is what we did was we went and did a bit of digging in Sabah and looked at two areas, Kinabatangan as well as Mantanani. And going to focus today on Mantanani, the islands, because there's a lot of island tourism all over Malaysia, not just in Sabah, but in Sabah, there's a lot of island tourism. And on Mantanani Islands, these islands are a group of beautiful, absolutely gorgeous islands in the sort of northwest of Sabah. And what happened there was the locals had basically been overfishing. Mm-hmm. So there were bad practices like fish bombing as well that had been going on. It was, in fact, a fish bombing hotspot. So overfishing, fish bombing, bad practices and all that, and they were depleting their resources and they were losing a lot of income. Now, when tourism started going to Mantanani, the locals, it was all started by people from the mainland. And then the locals saw, okay, here's an opportunity for us to switch. And so they did, you know. And in fact, tourism has not only helped them in terms of their income. At the lowest point, I think locals were only earning about 500 ringgit a month because they couldn't fish enough. They didn't have enough fish to sell. So tourism sort of came as a rescue. And they were doing quite well. And then the NGOs came in and helped to sort of make them look at sustainable tourism as well, not to over-harvest resources, how to do it sustainably. And then the COVID hit. And MCO hit. Mm. And then everybody lost their income, not just the locals, but also, you know, everybody else who was operating there. Zero income. And Sabah, I think the figures are really, I'm sure it's the case in the whole of Semenanjung as well, but Sabah lost about 98% of tourism revenue in April and May. That's 1 month after, 1 or 2 months after the MCO kicked in, yeah? And by July, travel agencies in Sabah had lost 90% of revenue. That's very, very scary. So on the island, what were these people going to do? They had to ask for help. And luckily, the NGO that was working with them, or continues to work with them, which is Reef Check Malaysia, helped to organize aid, which came through government sources and all the rest of it as well. But the NGOs came in. And then now what's happening is local tourism has actually started to pick up again. So according to Reef Check numbers, most of the tourism actually came from overseas. You know, most of the tourism were foreigners, Chinese and South Koreans, actually. And it was actually mass tourism. And one of the concerns pre-MCO was that there were too many. It was becoming unsustainable because there was a lot of litter being left behind. There was a lot of destruction of shallow reef corals from snorkelers. Mm. And then the deeper reefs were getting affected as well by divers. And local communities actually weren't getting too much of the pie because they didn't have the skills, you know. Mm. So what the NGO had been doing was to try and build up the skills for homestays, for guiding skills and that sort of thing, which was good. So what happens? No tourists, no income. Now, then the worry is, are these villagers then going to go back to fishing? Are they going to go back to fish bombing? You know, And that has actually not been the case. They have gone back to fishing, but to fish for themselves. But unfortunately, what has happened is actually fishing boats have been coming from mainland, from Kota Belud and from as far as Kota Kinabalu to fish around the areas, the marine areas that actually have been recovering because of tourism. So there's all sorts of impacts, you know. So one good thing that has happened is that ReefCheck have started on what they have been planning all along, but now it's been sort of like hastened, and that is alternative livelihoods to tourism. So we're looking at community farming, that's for self-sustenance. They're also looking at virgin coconut oil, and they're looking at abalone farming. So this has just started, but it's an alternative to tourism, and the hope is that, you know, they'll be able to sell these products regardless of whether they're tourists or not.
Yeah, that's so important, right? That's alternative livelihood to just depending on ecotourism. Makranga has been doing a few stories on, you know, that somehow it just relates to ecotourism. And the more I look at it, it's like ecotourism, we can also see it as a form of, I guess, exploiting nature. We're still making money off nature. Mm-hmm. And it's almost more or less like, you know, it's not as destructive as, say, like, you know, fish bombing and that. But if you overdo it, you're still harassing nature and it's still affecting the animals and the ecosystem, you know, exceeding the carrying capacity and all that kind of stuff. So got to be really careful. You know, in Thailand, in the past 2 years, even, you know, way before COVID, right, they've already realized that the beaches are suffering, you know, the national parks are suffering because there's just way too many tourists. I'm bringing in the money short term, but, you know, they could see the impact of it. So since 2 years ago, Thailand has already started, like, you know, shutting down some of the national parks or parts of the year, really limiting the number of visitors by making all of them like buy e-tickets online first before they can actually come. So that's all of that is great and something that I think we can really look forward to. I think it's what they call high value, low impact ecotourism.
Mm, yes.
I think that's good. But I also hope that doesn't make it too expensive for me to go to, you know, like Taman Negara or something. Yeah, but you've got a plan for that, I think.
Yeah, I think that as COVID looks as if it's, you know, just going to go on and on and on, you know, right now, because of the surge, so several parks in Sabah have already shut down. Kinabalu Park has shut down for a week because they discovered COVID-positive people there. The Tawa Hills Park, the Tun Sakaran Marine Park, Sipadan Island Park, these have all been shut down for a week, you know, because of the scare, the COVID scare, that the numbers are spiking. So people who depend on their livelihood, they depend on these nature's tourism sites for their livelihood, really, really need to look at livelihoods. Because if you don't look after livelihoods, conservation is going to suffer.
Yeah. And I know that you guys, like you mentioned, Yahua, you're doing a lot of stories surrounding this. So again, you know, we can look for updates on makaranga.org. But just looking forward, you know, October 10th is World Migratory Bird Day. What are some things that we can look forward to?
Right. Yeah, Alyssa, I know this is like something happy to look forward to.
I know, it's a bit doom and gloom before this, but yeah,
right,
something
yeah,
happy.
Something that Malaysia, you know, can celebrate. Like, as you said, you know, next Saturday is World Migratory Bird Day. And the theme this year is Birds Connect Our World. And certainly, birds have definitely helped connect Malaysia to the rest of the world because migratory birds in the early part of the year, I think after July, you know, they come down south. From the north, you know, say in China, Japan, you know, they come down towards Malaysia and then onwards to even south to Australia. So we are a transit point. And these birds, they pass through Malaysia sometime in September and October. So that's now. And then, of course, on the return trip, they pass through Malaysia again on February to May. So they're just, you know, maybe the conditions are colder where they breed in the north. So then they move south for better conditions and then the other way around. So definitely, you know, these birds, as they're passing through, they connect Malaysia to the rest of the world and be an important site for them. In fact, according to BirdLife International, up to a third of all bird species in Malaysia are actually migratory birds. So that's about 240 species, including some very endangered species. Mm-hmm. So I guess the highlight here is for us to, well, where possible, to go out, you know, just Google for bird watching sites or migratory bird sites in Malaysia and you find lists and then you can just bring your family, watch those birds. But some of this, you know, what BirdLife call the important bird and biodiversity areas, you know, there are about 55 of these areas in Malaysia, but some of them are actually threatened. Like there's one up north in Penang, I think.
That's right. It's a very small area, perhaps not very well known, but I think it's come to prominence because there's an NGO, a very, very tiny NGO sort of working on it. So you can check them out because they do bring people out to birdwatch. And they the NGO is called Shorebirds of Peninsular Malaysia Research Project. Yeah. So they have some funding from the Habitat Foundation and they're doing a sort of longish term study on what's happening out there. So this area is called the Teluk Air Tawar Kuala Muda IBA. And it's actually considered an IBA in danger. Yeah, it's basically a very interesting area which comprises tidal mudflats and mangroves. It's sort of north of mainland Penang, you know, which is on Seberang Parai, sort of stretching along the coast. Yeah. And what's important here is there's about 61, this is according to BirdLife International, yeah? There's about 61 species that are identified, and it's especially important for shorebirds and egrets, yeah? And there are also some sort of near-threatened species, like the Far Eastern Curlew, and it's interestingly also important for non-birds. They also include near-threatened animals like the long-tailed macaque, silver-leaf monkey, yeah, and reptiles as well. Yeah, it's important that research is being conducted here. We've heard of some threats, but we will maybe in the next coming months try and do a little bit of research before we say what these threats are. But it's definitely being threatened. In fact, the threat score is considered very high, according to the BirdLife International.
All right, so lots happening there. And I guess, again, you know, if you'd like more information, if you'd like to find out more about all of this, do head to makaranga.org and find out what Siu Lin and Niao Hua have found out and dug up for us. But thank you both of you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So I've been speaking to Wong Siu Lin and Lau Yao Hua, the co-founders, co-editors and writers of makaranga.org. If you'd like to find out more, head to their website. And if you missed any part of today's interview, just head to bfm.my. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.